Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Hugh Broma. He's the CEO of the Entrust Group. And the Entrust Group was founded in 1981. Hugh is recognized as an industry spokesperson in the self-directed market. Entrust provides tax-enhanced services such as self-directed IRAs and qualified plans to all taxpayers through its national network of franchise and company-owned offices throughout the United States. And currently, you manage about $2 billion in assets. Hugh, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
That's a long introduction.
Yeah.
I've known you for a long time, and I guess our doing something together is long overdue. But I got to tell you, your website is just about the most informative website I have ever seen.
Well, thank you. It's pretty big.
It is, and it's well thought out, and it would be a big help for someone that had questions about what they were about to do. They could get a lot of answers there. So that was the first thing. I did a lot of that this morning as I was on there looking at that going, my goodness, there's a lot of information. You started Entrust in 1981. How many people worked for the company back then?
Well, one.
Okay. you were all by your lonesome?
Yeah, well, actually, it was I was there doing all of the IRA and qualified plan self-directed work, and I had a fellow that worked with me that was a consultant who did financial industry consulting. And so we did a number of different things at that time, but he was not in the IRA business. I did all of the IRA and qualified plan side.
And how many people are currently employed by Entrust in one way or another?
Oh, about 200.
200.
Yeah, and with all our companies together, we've got about a little over $4 billion in assets.
$4 billion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the two is two of our companies, but we've added some since that. And then we have about 50,000 clients now.
Wow. What was the first book that you wrote?
The first book I wrote was How to Invest in Real Estate Using Your IRA or 401k.
Okay. Now, and what year was that?
That was the one that was when I started working with McGraw-Hill, and mm-hmm. that was in 2003 and 4.
Okay. Now, you've known about this and kept it a secret, apparently, from me for a while. How long ago did you start doing that with, your own type of funds that you were messing around owning real estate? Do you remember?
Yeah. At the Wanda Properties out in your neck of the
woods. I was going to say, Etiwanda is in Mira Loma.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I had an apartment building back there in 1978.
Wow.
Yeah.
78?
Yeah.
That just is amazing. That's
just the other day.
You knew all this stuff way back then. Okay. I mean, 200 people, that's a lot of people. The growth of this company exceed what you ever thought would happen?
Yeah, pretty much. And part of our plan was to make individual retirement accounts that are self-directed available to everyone. And so we've created the first and now still the only network of offices. We have a franchise system that brings it to people's regions and neighborhoods.
And that's not common at all. You're the only one?
We're the only ones.
If someone said, what is Entrust's core business? Someone's trying to get to know and understand what you do.
We are record keepers and administrators for individual retirement accounts and qualified plans. And our emphasis is for self-directed investments in real estate, notes, and private placements.
A self-directed decision on what to do with your retirement, has that always been available, or was that something that some law changed the ability to do?
1975.
Okay.
Yep.
And what was that, ERISA?
ERISA,
okay.
Yeah.
Way back there, I remember in my mind, I'm thinking ERISA. I don't know why that came to mind, but okay, ERISA.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right.
Now, what did people do prior to that? They relied on the companies? Probably the company had some kind of defined benefit plan?
Yeah, that's what was in vogue at that time. And defined benefit plans, which were real pension and retirement accounts, And then with ERISA came the availability of also having defined contribution plans, which used to be known as KEOs and HR 10 plans. And then subsequent to then that, we had the 401k provision for profit sharing plans that allowed individuals to defer money into the plan that the employer provided. And that's why we hear 401k all the time. It's really a provision of a profit sharing plan. And those are all self-directable if the plan allows it.
Okay. A defined benefit plan doesn't really talk about the contribution side, but at the end of the game, there's supposed to be a check for everybody in a certain predetermined amount. Is that kind of the truth?
Absolutely correct.
Okay. What happens if somebody messes up along the way, or you have a 2006 and 7 where half of the money is lost temporarily?
That is really bad. And what it is that because it is a defined benefit and you're supposed to define the benefit that you're going to get at the end at retirement, that when there are losses or there aren't sufficient funds, the employer has to find a way to make that up. And some employers are actually having to borrow money to make those defined benefits plans work. Or in many cases, and what's most common now, is the defined benefit plan gets closed and then rolled into a defined contribution plan so the pension is no longer defined.
When you say closed, I mean, that sounds like, I'm sorry, the defined benefit you were counting on isn't showing up.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sort of like a bankrupt plan.
Yeah, sort of. It's, you know, it's the official NICE language is that the plan is being terminated and rolled to a defined contribution plan or an individual retirement account for each of the employees or participants.
And that's not a voting issue. That's just, that's the way it's going to play out.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay. A lot of cities still have defined benefit plans?
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big issues where we had one of the cities up in Northern California. They actually declared bankruptcy because 90% of their income went to a defined or fixed cost of retirement.
Correct.
It was just okay, game over. The ERISA Act, did it make, if we go out to the end of the time, did it make most people wealthier at the end?
No.
Okay. So self-directed doesn't always mean good decisions are made.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, Entrust doesn't really say, you know, you guys ought to do this with your money.
That's correct. We give no investment advice whatever.
But you do seem to give them a lot of education.
That's what we do.
Okay. So you make available to people a wide variety of education, saying if you're going to go and do this with your money, here's at least somebody that can share with you the process and maybe the right way to do it. Is that
right?
Okay.
Yeah, we like expertise, and what we do is we tell people you need to have expertise. And by the way, there are people who have that expertise, and we don't have that. But you know, I know Bruce does.
I mean, I think that's a great service. I mean, I'm excited that we're going to get to do our first one in January. But I mean, I really do think that probably people almost expect there to be some automatic system in place once they have a self-directed IRA. They put the money over there, and then, they don't know what to do with it. Does that happen quite often?
It doesn't happen very often to us.
Okay.
Because what we do is we emphasize education, that the individual, before they open an account, know what it is that they want to do or have a good sense of what they want to do. So they've already done their education about what kind of investments they like and what they want to choose. So if, let's say somebody likes notes or real estate, that they have a fairly good knowledge base of what they're going to be involved in. And they have oftentimes selected the investment that they're going to make because that way they can put their money to work right away.
Okay. You're known, Entrust is known as a custodian. Is that a correct term?
We are an administrator and record keeper for custodian banks.
Okay, for custodian banks.
Right. And what that means is that we are hired by, let's say in our case, we have Mechanics Bank in Richmond, California, that hires us to do the record keeping and administration for individual retirement accounts. and we do all the heavy lifting and all the hard work to make that available to the customers for the custodian and, of course, us.
Do most custodians suggest investments?
Many do.
Okay. And is that, in some cases, a conflict? Is it more directed to whatever, and I'm not saying this, that everybody has this something selfish in mind, but it would make sense that if you were dealing with a stockbroker as a custodian, he might say, this is what I understand, this is what you should do. So is it sometimes directed to the skill level of whoever you're dealing with or the experience in that certain investment?
Yeah, exactly that. So when what you'll find out is that exactly as you say, the custodians have a particular expertise. Let's say Fidelity Investments or Schwab or someone like that will say, gee, you ought to be buying equities. Or, you know.
Which would make sense that they would know that game, so it's not even a bad intent. It's just, this is what I do, so this is what you should do as well.
Correct. And that's why our industry is relatively narrowly defined, because what we're doing is something very different, and we're saying you have the option to make any decision that you want that sounds reasonable for you.
What would be some of the warning signs of a custodian that you think could cause somebody some losses?
Well, the custodians have to, under the Internal Revenue Code, be a bank or a non-bank trustee as defined by the Secretary of the Treasury,
okay,
savings and loans, credit union. And the sign of a custodian that is a problem is that now, because of the crises that we've been through for the last couple of years, people can look up the status of banks fairly easily. And if the bank is going to is having problems and their ratings are relatively low, then the judgment can be based on whether the bank is going to be in business. Having said that, the banks have all been absorbed by other banks, so the new bank is going to continue on as a custodian, whoever that may be. So if a bank fails, it now gets absorbed by a bank that the FDIC usually selects, and they'll continue on in that role. So there's really no danger, per se, that we know of where a bank has been completely closed down and the FDIC has told every individual retirement account to basically find another custodian. That hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Can custodians suggest things that turn out to be, I don't know, something that just was against the rules? No one intended it, but, gee, you aren't supposed to be allowed to do that. Yeah. Is there ramifications for the individual if something they did turned out to be not allowed?
What has happened is most custodians don't know what is or isn't allowed. That's what they hire us for.
Okay, so that is, it kind of goes through a filter called interest before
yep.
that decision is made.
That's correct.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yep.
I at your website, I noticed that it seemed like there was an educational event, if not every week. I mean, actually, almost every other day, but
yep.
a lot of education.
Right.
Webinars, is that becoming more popular?
Webinars are incredibly popular. Many of our offices do webinars at least weekly. And we, of course, love personal presentations, because that way the interaction with the audience is something that you cannot ever get in a webinar. But we provide access to all of those different kinds of approaches to media.
Who's typically in the audience? When you and I get together on the 22nd of December, who will likely be there?
It will most likely be individuals who are relatively sophisticated, have a fairly good idea what they want to do, know what a self-directed IRA is, and want to be more informed about what it is that they can do with their individual retirement account, what kind of investment potential there is. And I think it tends to be more not the starter, people who are for the first time ever going to start doing an investment, although it may be. We've had a number of people who've said, gee, this is a great seminar, but I maybe ought to get some basic information. Of course, we're always happy to provide that. But I think we're really talking about the medium to higher sophistication level of investor.
Now, you mentioned you had about 50,000 clients. Do some of them regularly come to these education, or is this mostly for new people?
Nope. Mostly the new ones, what we do is we suggest that they come to some of our introductory seminars. But when you and I are doing a session together, it's going to be, I know some of the people are coming already, and some of these people are who have had accounts with us for 20 years.
Okay, so it can be very advanced, and the audience will certainly be ready for whatever we toss at them.
That's correct.
Self-directed seems like complete freedom to do what you want. Are there some rules that limit choices?
Yes. The limitations are there are certain collectibles which are not permitted. They were back defined in 1981. They're gems, works of art, stamps, antiques, alcoholic beverages, collectible coins. Also, the other things that are not permitted are self-dealing transactions. And easily defined, it's anything where the individual and retirement account owner or the qualified plan owner receives some current benefit or any current benefit from the investment in their IRA or their plan. So, and that includes family members to some extent as well.
Okay. Now, you mentioned no coins. Gold has seen quite an exciting rise. Silver,
yep,
pretty much along the same lines. Is bullion allowed?
Bullion is allowed, and also gold and silver eagles and platinum.
Okay. And where are people allowed to physically take possession of this, or is it like a 1031 exchange? It's got to be over there in an accommodator account.
It's got to be in the trust account. Yeah, there are people who advertise that you can hold the gold at home and that kind of a thing, but that's just simply not true.
So,
an IRA, you can't do that. So,
well, let's say somebody. Now, that's kind of what I was alluding to before. Somebody that you think knows tells you it's perfectly okay, and you know you have it parked out in your living room, and somehow the IRS comes and makes a visit and say, what's that? And you go, well, yeah, that's my 90-ounce bars of silver. You go, you're not supposed to have that. What's the ramifications for crossing that line?
Well, first of all, if it's an IRA, then it's not permitted. So whoever is the administrator or custodian of the IRA won't permit that. But let's say it happened, that somebody did. It becomes a distribution at the market value as of 12/31 of the year in which the prohibited transaction took place, and it's distributed to the individual. It's taxed, and there may be an excise tax and a few other penalties. It can be as high as 155% of the value of the bar of gold.
Okay, so we shouldn't do that then.
Not a good idea.
Okay. How often do the rules change? You mentioned something about 1981. That's a long time for consistency.
Well, I'll tell you, rules change, small rules change relatively frequently.
Okay.
At least every month there's some kind of happening where there's a private letter ruling or a prohibited transaction exemption or a court case that will change the interpretation of the established rules. But the code itself doesn't change that often. We've had probably about 10 code changes in the last, approximately 10 in the last 20 years.
In your recent newsletter, now that's a monthly?
Yes.
And it's free?
Yes.
There was one article said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
I was just curious because, I mean, we certainly have had our run of them, if you will. If you go back to 2000, you know, the stock market did its thing and now real estate has done it. Are investors that self-direct their own money, are they more inclined to buy at a bottom or invest with a trend and get damaged by their decision?
What we've found is, and it's something that I know that you know better than I do, is that you have a level of sophisticated investors that looks at the trends in a particular way, and they understand the trends, and they get the information that provides them an idea of what the trends are. So the sophisticated investor will end up buying close to the trough and not at the peak. I don't know anybody who's ever been able to predict the absolute low or the absolute high. And I know both you and I have had that experience of never having been able to find exactly when that point is. But the sophisticated people know when the highs are, they have a good idea of where the highs and lows are going to be because they're informed. But we do have individuals who do get hurt. They get caught in a frenzy and figure, you know, like, gee whiz, real estate will never lose any money. It's just going to go up forever. And we have trillions of dollars that evidence that kind of behavior.
That's kind of what I was wondering, and I really don't know the answer. I was wondering if somebody would have been more likely to take their funds and say, I'd like a piece of real estate in 05 and 06, or are they buying more now in 2009 that the price has been really damaged?
They're starting to buy again, because what we saw is that a number of people are really going into cash. So when we see the cash volumes increase, we know that it's not only as a result of our wonderful business development efforts, but people are getting into cash, getting ready for what they see as an issue. And we saw a lot of people do that. So, and what we've seen is we've had quite a bit of buying activity now because there are apparently people thinking that we're at a point in a trough. But no one's really entirely predicted whether or not this is a single dip or whether there's going to be a double dip, you know, a W kind of a situation.
What percentage of people have self-directed retirement accounts at this point?
In the United States, it's estimated anywhere from 1.5% to 2% of the dollars are in self-directed accounts.
Wow, that's still a lot. I'm almost flabbergasted it's that low.
It's tiny.
Yeah. What do the other 98.5% to 98% do? Well, who do they let make those decisions?
Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, certificates of deposits, and insurance products.
And we're talking retirement dollars, so those decisions really aren't made by them. They're made by somebody else.
Yeah, they're usually made by somebody else. In the qualified plan market, which has different data, what happens is that people are able to select, let's say, among six funds. 80% of those individuals who make those kinds of decisions never change their decision in the life of their 401k.
Okay.
Wow. Terrible.
So they don't get to take advantage of any troughs, that's for sure.
They sure don't.
They just ride it, and hopefully they retire at a peak somehow.
Yeah, and the mentality is, look, I don't need the money until I'm 65, and I'm only 35 years old, and I'll just wait. When I'm 65, I'm expecting to withdraw money.
Yeah, that's not the best plan, I don't think.
No.
We only have about a minute and a half left. How much money, let's say if you're self-employed, what's the most common retirement vehicle those people choose, and how much money can they set aside?
They have the SEP IRA or the individual 401k plan, which is for a company without employees. And even if they have employees, they'll have a 401k plan. Those are the two most popular, and they can set aside anywhere from $46,000 to $51,000 a year of earned income.
They can set aside up to $51,000 a year?
Right.
And
yep.
It's a percentage of what they made?
It's their absolute dollars of what it is that they make. So it has to be just in compensation. So let's say somebody made $51,000, they could set aside $51,000 under the right circumstances.
Okay.
General rule. Yeah.
And that's what Entrust would do, would maybe sit down with somebody and say, these are the options you have, and maybe let them decide which one is best for them?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your website is the EntrustGroup.com?
Correct.
And it's ENTRUST Group.com?
Correct.
And December 22nd, you and I are going to get together and teach for a day, and I get the feeling you like to teach about as much as I do.
Is that December 22nd?
No, January 22nd. Thanks.
Okay. That's right.
I'll just check
in.
I'll just check in to see if you remember.
That's right. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's interesting because you look at the, you know, what the dates are. I'm going, gee, I'm going to be in Africa that day.
So you won't be showing up.
That's right.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and we're going to be talking to you again next week.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.